57. Lydia. Her return to Killian's camp was a blur. After Sonia and the Rowanist soldiers had pulled them up, they'd parted ways. Lydia hadn't wanted to leave him, not when she'd just come so close to losing him. But Killian needed to resume command of his forces, and her assistance with the injured was required, for there were many, and even more dead. Dressed only in boots and a rain-soaked shift, her robes lost to the river, she'd gratefully accepted a cloak from one of the soldiers, and then set to work stabilizing the worst of the injured so they could be transported back to camp. A strange form of detachment fell over her as she worked, her eyes for the injury, but not the suffering. Life slipping from her fingertips to stop bleeding and bolster stuttering hearts, even as the cloud of swirling life shed by the dead, the dying, and even the living flowed toward her like iron to a lodestone. As awful a place as it was to work, stepping over severed limbs and pools of blood and still corpses, there was also something right about using the life sacrificed by the fallen in order to save their faltering comrades. And she saw now that her fears of this circumstance had been misguided. This was where she was meant to be, what she was meant to do. It was what would come next that terrified her. Rising, she wiped her hands on her ruined shift, then nodded at the waiting soldiers to lift the man on the ground before her. The gaping wound in his guts sealed over, though he'd require more attention if he were to live. A wave of dizziness passed over her and she swayed. Another soldier caught at her elbow. "General Calorian gave orders that we bring you to the barracks to rest," marked one.
"Call me Lydia, please."
She'd be glad to be gone from the Rowanist lands, if for no other reason than to be free of that ridiculous honorific. "I'll travel with the wounded, then remain with them."
"He suggested you'd say as much,"
the man answered, still holding her elbow as though she might topple over at any moment.
"He asked that I inform you that there are others waiting who are more than capable of helping the injured."
Extracting her elbow from his grip, she crossed her arms.
"But no one marked."
The soldier sighed, looking as though he wished he were anywhere other than here, having this conversation.
"General Calorian implied you'd say that too. He said, and pardon my words, marked one, for I'm merely repeating him, but tell her if she doesn't listen that I'll come find her myself, haul her back to camp, and lock her in a bedroom until she gets proper rest."
There was an aspect of the threat that was undeniably enticing, but Lydia only sniffed and said,
"He's welcome to try,"
then started down the path, following the lantern light of those carrying the injured. It took over an hour for them to reach the barracks, which were a flurry of activity, but she was greeted by a familiar face.
"Finn!"
Closing the distance between them, she wrapped her arms around his skinny shoulders, holding him tight. Though the length of time it had been since she'd seen him could be measured in weeks, it seemed as though he'd grown taller, perhaps slightly broader of shoulder. But the greatest change was his expression, a seriousness to him that hadn't been there back in Mudare.
"It's good to see you,"
he said, squeezing her hard enough that her ribs ached.
"Things will be better with you here. They always are."
Her skin crawled with unease, less for his words than for the relief in his voice, making her question what precisely had gone so wrong in her absence. Then Finn stepped back.
"I'll take you to get cleaned up. Arrange for some clothes and whatnot. Can't have you walking about a camp full of soldiers wearing that. Especially not with old lady legs."
Lydia curbed the urge to kick him in the shins, instead twitching her borrowed cloak more tightly around her body. A quick glance at her braid revealed a mixture of black and silver. The years she'd given up to save the wounded soldiers were coming back to her, though not nearly as quickly as she liked. She followed Finn through the heavily fortified camp. He led her to a large stone building,
pulling open the heavy doors to reveal two narrow rooms to either side full of weapons and gear. Beyond was a large room with several tables littered with maps and papers, and on the far side, a corridor.
"This is the officer's barracks," Finn explained. "You can use Killian's rooms to get cleaned up. He won't mind."
Lydia's heart skipped, her skin flushing ever so slightly, but she only nodded as Finn took her to the room at the end, unlatched the door, and pulled it open. To reveal an absolute disaster of a mess. There were clothes on the floor and hanging across the backs of chairs, as though they'd been pulled off, tossed aside, then forgotten. The table had no fewer than 8 dirty glasses, 3 empty wine bottles, and a stack of dirty dishes, at least one of which was starting to grow mold. The bedclothes were in total disarray. The wardrobe doors were open, and every which way she looked were bits of armor and weapons, the blades the only things in the entire mess that didn't appear in need of a good cleaning. Finn hesitated. Then an apologetic grimace rose on his face.
Sorry for the mess. I haven't had much time to do any cleaning.
Lydia stepped over a muddy pair of boots in the middle of the floor. "Why are you responsible for cleaning up after him?" The grimace turned to a grin.
"Because he made me his squire. He's teaching me how to fight, but in exchange I'm supposed to clean up and whatnot."
From the looks of it, the whatnot had taken extreme priority over the cleaning up, but the boy seemed so pleased with his circumstances that she held her tongue.
"I'll get you some wash water," Finn said. "I'll be back in a minute."
Then, gathering up an armload of filthy dishes, he disappeared out the door. Moments later, he returned with a pitcher of water and a clean basin. The washing of said things, obviously someone else's responsibility, for which she was deeply grateful.
"Make yourself at home," he said. "I'll see about getting you something to eat."
Then, his arms now full of empty bottles and glasses, he departed, kicking the door shut behind him, leaving her alone in Killian's room. Looking down at her garments, Lydia sighed, seeing that her shift was drenched with blood as well as smeared with mud, as were her bare legs. Circling the room, she eventually found a shirt that appeared clean enough. She set it across the back of a chair while she removed her filthy garments and set to work washing the gore from her skin, making liberal use of the bar of soap on the washstand. Only once she was through did she glance at the mirror, noting that her face had returned to its usual 18-year-old self, her damp hair dark again. Her skin dry, she pulled Killian's shirt over her head. The costly fabric fell nearly to her knees, the arms long enough she had to roll the cuffs, but the garment covered far more of her than her shift had. Finn still hadn't returned with food, so she went to the bed, righting the linens and furs and pillows before sitting on the edge of it. She was so tired, so painfully and exhaustingly tired. And not just because she'd been awake for close to a day and had healed dozens of soldiers, but because of the conversation she and Killian needed to have. Staring at the carpet on the ground, she mentally composed a speech explaining that King Sarek and the Royal Army had been reduced to walking corpses, that Cinta and Rufina were one and the same. But the part where her mind stuttered was finding a way to tell him that Malahai was alive and Rufina's prisoner, as well as her belief that the queen was being forced to use her mark to dark ends. Her eyes burned, and deciding that Finn had been distracted and wasn't coming, Lydia lay down and pulled one of the furs over her cold legs. The bedding smelled like Killian, like soap and horses and leather. And she buried her face in the pillow, inhaling deeply, desire and misery fighting each other for supremacy in her core. "It can't be," she silently reminded herself. "Malahai is alive.
He's still betrothed to her, still sworn to her for life. Sleep began to steal over her, the world fading away. But then the loud thud of boots, along with sharp clangs of metal things being dropped, jerked her awake.
Finn!
Killian's voice, muffled through the door, but clearly him.
I need you to clean the blood off of all of this before it rusts. And please tell me I have at least one clean shirt in the disaster that I know is on the other side of this door.
Said door flung open, and Lydia clambered to her feet, watching as Killian strode in, his face concealed by the padding he wore under his armor, as he tore it off and tossed it into the hallway, then pulled the door shut. Turning, his eyes latched on her. And he froze. Before he could speak, she blurted out, Finn told me to wait in here. I'm still waiting for someone to bring me clothes.
Right.
His throat moved as he swallowed.
He didn't mention it when I came in.
Her face burned hot. I can leave.
Don't leave.
His cheeks flushed, slightly pink.
I mean, it's fine that you're here. I just didn't.
He glanced down at his bare chest.
I needed a clean shirt.
You don't have any, she informed him, struggling to keep her own eyes on his face. 1,000 times she'd imagined seeing him like this. But what visions her imagination had conjured were pale comparisons to the reality. His body all hard muscle and taut, dusky skin. The weight of his weapons pulling his trousers low enough to reveal his hip bones. You don't have clean anything. This room is a disaster. He laughed, scrubbing a hand through his wet hair, the dark locks falling back to rest against his cheeks, which looked as though they hadn't seen a razor in close to a week.
Normally, Finn is better at flirting with the kitchen girls to get them to do the work for him. He must be losing his touch.
Silence stretched. The few paces that were all that stood between them so thick with tension, Lydia felt she could hardly breathe, much less speak. Tell him. Her conscience screamed at her. Get it over with. Yet before she could work up the courage to open her lips, Killian said,
I thought you were dead. We received word from Sarek that Hegiria's tower had been overrun by blighters and that all inside had been killed.
It was, and they were. She swallowed, grief for her fellow healers that had fallen rising in her chest. That message didn't come from Sarek. He's dead and risen as a blighter. The whole royal army has been turned. It was Rufina. She and Cinta are one and the same. Using her mark to take lives gives her back her youth, but the effect fades. She's been controlling Sarek this whole time, and when I discovered how to cure those infected by the blight before they turned, she made her move.
Gods,
he whispered.
How did you get out?
High Lady Falorn rescued me when the blighter army attacked Hegiria's temple. We were able to make it to a Marin ship waiting out at sea, and they brought us south via Xenthier. Dorina, Gwen, and Lena are heading to Serlania to rally an army. He closed his eyes, giving a slight shake of his head before opening them.
I'm in Dorina's debt.
It was my life. If anyone owes her, it's me. Although High Lady Falorn didn't seem the sort to hold debts.
It should have been me.
In 3 quick steps, he was in front of her, only inches separating them.
I shouldn't have left you there, knowing the dangers. At the very least, I should have been there.
We both know that wasn't possible, and I don't regret choosing to go. Though she knew she shouldn't, Lydia reached up, curling her hand around the back of his neck. His skin was hot beneath her fingers, his hair soft where it brushed the back of her wrist. But you should know that I felt your absence keenly.
Is that why you're here?
His voice was rough, low enough that if she hadn't been so close to him, she wouldn't have heard.
She was here because Malahai was alive and needed to be rescued. Here because an army of possessed corpses would soon march south to make war on the living. But as his hand curved around her waist, warm through the thin linen of his shirt, none of that seemed to matter. Yes. And then his mouth descended on hers, words ceasing to matter. She'd dreamed of this. Gods, but she'd dreamed of it. Of the softness of his lips and the taste of his tongue and the feel of his body against her hands. But again, her mind had failed her. Not in its reckoning of her desire, which flowed hot and wild through her veins, but in how intensely she would feel the rightness of his touch, as though his hands had been made to curve around her waist, to slide down her hips, to lift her into his arms and hold her in place as she wrapped her naked legs around him, as though the gods themselves had constructed them to fit together like pieces of a puzzle. Killian was meant for her, and she for him. His lips trailed from her mouth to her throat, and she tangled her fingers in his hair, hearing the rapidness of his breath, each ragged exhale ratcheting up her need for more, to have everything, and to give everything in return. He carried her to the bed, slowly lowering her until her back pressed against the furs, his shirt sliding up her thighs as he kissed her collarbone, then moved down until the neckline of the shirt stole a growl of annoyance from his chest. Reaching up, he caught hold and pulled, sending buttons flying everywhere. A gasp tore from her throat as the fabric fluttered down against her breasts, her sternum and navel rendered bare. Killian pushed himself back, the muscles in his arms standing out against his skin, his eyes roving down her body. With anyone else, she would have cringed beneath the scrutiny. But his gaze only turned her body to liquid, her head falling back against the bed, her back arching as his fingers brushed the fabric of his shirt away from her breasts. Then his eyes locked on hers.
There isn't a woman in the world more beautiful than you.
He lowered his head to kiss her lips softly.
No one more perfect.
You aren't perfect. An ugly voice whispered from deep in her thoughts. But the voice was driven away as Killian's lips moved downwards. His tongue teased the tip of one breast and then the other before he continued his descent. She writhed beneath him, digging her fingers into the muscles of his shoulders, trailing her nails down his back, a smile rising to her lips as he groaned, his breath hot where his lips pressed just below her belly button.
You need to tell him about Malahai, about you need to stop this.
But the thoughts seemed distant, because what she wanted was him, all of him, especially with his fingers trailing lines of fire up the insides of her naked legs, leaving behind prickles of sensation as he kissed the inside of her knee, his cheek rough against her inner thigh. If you let this happen, you will hurt him. The thought slapped her across the face, and one word tore from her lips. Stop. She'd meant it for herself, not him, but Killian froze. Lifting his face, he looked at her with concern.
Did I?
Malahai's alive. She blurted the truth out before she lost her courage, before her own selfish desires resumed control. Rufina has her prisoner in Darren. We need to rescue her.
Tell him the rest. Get it done.
Except she couldn't. Killian didn't speak, only stared at her, horror filling his dark eyes. Then he whispered,
Malahai's alive.
If Rufina's to be believed.
and she's been a prisoner this entire time.
Her tongue was too thick, too dry to speak, so she nodded. Rufina discovered Malahai was a tender from Sarek. She's trying to force Malahai to expand the reach of the Blight.
Silence. The awful, crippling sort that made Lydia want to scream, "Say something!"
And then he did. And she wished for all the world that the silence had continued forever.
"Those,"
he whispered, pushing away from her,
"should have been the first words that exited your lips."
And with one violent motion, he turned away and crossed the room, the door slamming behind him.